A Life of Jesus by Brother Mel Baturkis, Book 6, Chapter 5. Mary chooses the good part. An expanse of limestone rock, interspersed with shrubs and a few stunted trees, forms the high plateau extending east of Jerusalem. It breaks suddenly into a shallow glen. There, the little village of Bethany nestles amid olive groves, clusters of figs and terraces of vines. To this sheltered spot, Jesus directed his steps on his way to Jerusalem to attend the Feast of Dedication. For the first time, we learn of that delightful family which did so much to ease the load which Jesus carried during the last fateful days of his mortal life. We're given no hint whether this was the first time that Jesus saw Mary and Martha. It may be that sometime previously, Lazarus, meeting Jesus in the temple, had been attracted to him and invited him to his home. It is possible that some of the 70 disciples had been well received there and had spoken to Jesus of the warm welcome they'd been given in this pious little household. But whatever the circumstances, the name of Bethany will always be fragrant and bring a sense of love and thankfulness into our hearts as we think of those hours of restfulness and peace which contrasted so sharply with the conflicts of the temple courts. It is not quite in harmony with this peaceful spirit that the first incident which was recorded in that home should have been the cause of so much discussion. But the responsibility for that must rest with those who, failing to catch the true significance of the words of Jesus, have tended to distinguish between practical Martha and contemplative Mary, and Martha's and Mary's ever since, thus dividing the service of Christ into two distinct spheres, and in the process finding little sympathy and justification for Martha. Let us picture the scene and try to draw from it some of the wealth which the counsel of Jesus always yields. The coming of so distinguished a guest into her home was a wonderful experience for Martha, and she was anxious to do the highest honour within the power of her generous nature. She busied herself with preparations worthy of such an occasion. It was evidently a household of some means, and Martha went out of her way to prepare a feast. Luke speaks of her as being cumbered about much serving. It would appear that she had had some notice of his coming, and Mary, her younger sister, had helped her until Jesus had arrived. But with his coming, Mary had forgotten all else in her loving homage, and a few moments later was sitting at his feet absorbing his words of life. For a time, Martha continued her work, preoccupied with her anxiety to give up her best. But as time went by, she grew increasingly aware of her sister's absence. And watching her sit there at the feet of Jesus, she began to feel resentful. Once such thoughts are harboured, they grow apace. Resentment soon turned to something remarkably like anger. And unable to restrain herself any longer, she went to Jesus. And beginning reverently by addressing him as Lord, she soon lost control of herself and gave way to her feelings. "Dost thou not care that my sister hath left me to serve alone?" How thoughtless such resentment can be. It had distorted the lovely character of Martha, revealing features quite unlike her. When we allow resentment and anger to affect our judgment, we are brought down to a common level. But how serious are the implications of her words? First of all, feeling disturbed herself, she tries to break into the peace of Jesus, desiring that he might share her disquiet. She presumes to expect that the Master will be deeply interested in the good things she's so carefully preparing for him. Admitting that Mary had already helped her, she suggests that she is doing nothing now but sitting idly at his feet. So highly does she assess her work in comparison with his, that she would have him left alone while her final preparations are made. The implication here is that Jesus had come primarily for the food that she would give him, and that Mary, therefore, listening to him, is wasting her time. "Bid her," she says, "that she help me." She instructs Jesus to stop his talking and send Mary to her to engage upon a more worthwhile task. Martha would have no idea of all her hasty words involved, but when these consequences were revealed, she would be the first to repent them. They are a warning to us not to make careless statements and pass thoughtless judgments where the things of God are concerned. In the light of grace, they may reveal a spirit which we would deplore. Martha, Martha, Jesus repeats her name, calling her out of her busy confusion. Thou art careful and troubled about many things. He was telling her it was not necessary for her to prepare these many things to welcome him into her house. We see a smile of reproach in his eyes. Oh, Martha, dear, in spite of your generous nature and your warm hospitality, you have forgotten who I am. You have not realized what I brought for you. It is still true that I have come not to be ministered unto, but minister. He looked down at the silent figure at his feet. But one thing is needful, and Mary have chosen that good part which shall not be taken away from her. There were two meals being prepared in that Bethany home, one by Jesus, the other by Martha. Who would dare to say that Martha's meal was the more important? The bread which perishes has little significance in the presence of the bread of life. Only one thing was needful, and Mary, sitting at his feet, had chosen it. The time would come when the sickness or age would deprive Martha of her part, but these could not take away what Mary had chosen. If only Martha had made the same choice and had sat down with Mary at his feet, she would have risen so fortified by the food he'd given her that when her turn for service came, she would have ministered to him with joy and peace in her heart. By dividing all disciples into Marys and Marthas, we do neither women justice, nor do we understand the import of the words of Jesus. There's no evidence that Mary was less practical than Martha. There's everything to suggest that Martha was deeply devout. This is just one of those human incidents which we often see in the Gospels and experience in our lives. But it's made fruitful by divine wisdom. Martha, overconscious for the moment of the greatness of her guest and of her responsibilities as his hostess, overlooked the blessings which he'd come to bestow. And that perspective lost, the seed of resentment had nothing to stop its growth, until the gentle chiding of Jesus awakened her and brought her to join Mary at his feet. But a great lesson emerges, one which no disciple can afford to miss. It has a wider application than the love of two women and takes us beyond the oven and the kitchen sink, though it by no means excludes them. It is the lesson that all service for Christ begins at his feet. There, learning of him and understanding what he requires of us, our hearts are filled with the glow of his joy and the serenity of his peace. Only then can we arise and serve him in that quiet confidence and love which will guard us from self-righteousness and pride. This great principle shines forth in the lives of all God's servants. They come forth from the solitude of prayer and meditation to serve. Those we deem most active were men of prayer, and those we associate with contemplation were men of action. Paul's supremely active service was preceded by 3 years in the desert at the feet of Jesus. John the Beloved, a disciple almost mystical in his spiritual apprehension, was also a man of action. Many of us run energetically around, almost grimly determined to serve him, growing weary in our labour and perhaps a little angry with our brethren. Let us learn the lesson that Jesus taught Martha, that our service is not a self-inspired attempt to minister to him. It is not for us to resort to him, allowing him to feed us so that we can rise in quietness of spirit and deep humility of mind to minister to his needs.